Welcome to Speaking of Grace, the weekly message podcast from the Whole Life Church in Orlando, Florida. We're a multi-ethnic, multicultural, and multi-generational congregation committed to our mission of loving people into a lifelong friendship with God. We are committed to our vision of being a church without walls, fully engaged in serving the people of our community. Thank you for joining us as we continue Speaking of Grace.
What a good week it's been here at Whole Life Church. I hope you had a great Juneteenth. I hope that was a good day for some reflection on freedom. And I hope that also you had a chance to see that we had Vacation Bible School here at Whole Life, and it was amazing. We're going to talk more about that in a little while, but to Aubrey and to Jennifer French, and all our volunteers, I just want to say how proud I am of just the great job. It was a great week here. Let's go ahead and bow our heads as we pray. Lord, thank you so much for this time together. As I speak, I pray that you would use me to share a message from you. Pray I wouldn't say anything you don't want me to. And I pray that your words would come out of my mouth. In your name I ask it. Amen. Yvonne loved all things outdoors growing up. Loved the outdoors. Loved nature. And as he grew older, some of his favorite things to do were rock climbing and surfing. Loved rock climbing. Loved surfing. And so as he came into adulthood and had to decide how to make a living, he knew he loved business. He knew he loved rock climbing. He knew he loved surfing. So he thought, how can I combine all the things I love into one thing? And so he decided to start making equipment for rock climbing, surfing. And then he kind of branched into other outdoor sports type of situations. And he also then kind of ventured into clothing, outdoor type of clothing, clothing that might, you know, be helpful for somebody who is surfing or somebody who is rock climbing or mountaineering, things like that. And so his business took off. It went really well. His business, in fact, it grew at such a rapid pace that at one point, Inc. magazine listed his business as one of the fastest growing privately held companies in the United States. However, in 1991, that growth came to a halt, according to his website. Came to a halt. There was a recession in the United States, and it crimped their sales, and the bank called in the revolving loan that his company had. And to pay off the debt, they had to lay off 20% of their workforce. Now, if you've ever been a small business owner or a large business owner, and you've built something from the ground up, you know that when you have employees, they become like family to you in that kind of environment. And certainly that was the case for Yvonne. Yvonne had been very forward-thinking in the way that he had treated his family and his work family. He provided childcare before. That was the cool thing to do for a company to do. He had an interest in his employees being healthy, and so he created a cafeteria that was mostly vegetarian. Yvonne really cared about his employees, and so for him to have to lay off 20% of them was heartbreaking for him to do. And it prompted him to really ask himself some questions. He'd always viewed himself first and foremost as somebody who cared about the environment and somebody who cared about outdoor sports activities. And as a business person, kind of secondarily. And he'd always prided himself that he didn't do things the way that everybody else did them. And yet he realized that he was doing things the way that everybody else was doing them. And so it created a reckoning for him. Now, if you know who Yvonne is, then you know his company is Patagonia. And Yvonne Chouinard wrote a book called Let My People Go Surfing. Because he literally lets his people go surfing. And in the book, he talked about this moment in 1991 that brought him to a crisis point where he gathered everybody around and started talking about it, about what to do. He gets his executives together. They actually go to Patagonia to talk about what to do, and he brings up to them something that he had discovered. He discovered in research that a Native American tribe known as the Iroquois had a principle that they put into place. It was called the seven-generation principle. In his book, Yvonne says that as part of that principle, as part of their decision process, the Iroquois had a person who represented the seventh generation in the future. So as the Iroquois had to make a decision for what they were going to do moving forward, they would have a person who was a part of that council who represented seven generations from now. Now, think about this for a minute. Most of us, when we make decisions, think about what's good for me right now. Those of us who are a little bit more altruistic think what's good for my kids. Those of us who are super altruistic think, well, what would be good for my grandkids? But the Iroquois, they didn't think about what was good for their grandkids, their great-grandkids, their great-great. You see, they went seven generations into the future and said, what would be good? How would this decision impact seven generations from now? Do the math on that. It's 150 to 200 years from now. How is the decision that I'm making right now going to impact seven generations from now? And so Chouinard took this principle and he incorporated it into Patagonia. And they decided that from there on out, they were going to be thinking at least 100 years forward with every decision that they made. That decision along with it led to a number of different things. One of my favorite things is that Chouinard started tithing. It's a privately held company, so he can do what he wants. And he took 1%. I know some of you are saying, Ken, tithe means 10%. Hang on for a minute. He dedicated 1% of total sales or 10% of profit, whichever was greater. You do understand the difference between profit and total sales, right? Yeah. Whichever was greater. And he poured it into environmental causes. That's what he decided to do. He did this with his company because it became not about what was best for him or even his kids, but how will this positively impact seven generations from now, over 100 years from now? How will it do that? And his company, in spite of making these difficult decisions, suddenly took off again. It's a privately held company, so nobody knows exactly what it's worth, but probably over $1 billion. And in 2022, he did something even crazier. He took his company that was his, created a trust, transferred all of the assets into the trust that is now being used for environmental causes that he believes. He gave up being a billionaire and put the money over there. Now, I'm sure he's doing all right. Don't worry about him. I'm sure he's fine. But my point is that there's not a lot of people that walk away from that kind of wealth. And he decided that this was what was going to benefit seven generations from now to do this. Today, that's what I'm wanting to talk to you about. I'm wanting to talk to you about digging wells. You're like, wait a minute, we were talking about, yeah, stick with me. So I want to talk to you about Isaac, because I've always felt sorry for Isaac in the Bible. Anybody else feel sorry for Isaac? There's, you know, the three patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I've always felt, some of you get it, like, right? Abraham, the father of faith. Jacob, the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. And Isaac. Right? What did Isaac do? I mean, okay, I know some of you are going to say, oh, well, he was potentially a sacrifice on Mount Moriah. That's what Abraham did. I mean, we can talk. I mean, and I preached sermons about that. And then he got taken advantage of by his son Jacob, right? Gets taken advantage of, gives the birthright to Jacob when he was supposed to give it to Esau. So I've always felt sorry for Isaac when I've read the Bible because there's Abraham, father of faith, Jacob, father of the 12 tribes of Israel, not always a good person, but did a lot of stuff. And then there's Isaac. What did he actually do? He dug wells. He dug wells, and it's more important than you think. It's more important than you think. Isaac dug wells. We don't think about the importance of water probably as much as a lot of other people in the world. For those of you who have traveled around the world, one of the things you will know if you do some traveling, any kind of traveling, is in a lot of places in the world, they will say, please do not drink the water out of the tap. Don't do it. Drink bottled water. Be careful. I've been in places where they said, be careful when you're in the shower that you don't get water in your mouth. Be careful when you're, do not brush your teeth. Don't use the water out of the tap for brushing your teeth. You will get sick. And I found out the hard way that can be true. We take water so for granted in the United States. We just turn a tap and we have it. Most of us, we might not like the taste of the water coming out of the tap, but you can drink it. For us, it's a walk to the refrigerator, get some water, you're fine. Get in the shower, turn, you've got water. But water is a valuable commodity, and it is hard to come by in many parts of the world. And certainly when Isaac was alive, it was a huge thing. It was hard to come by water. If you wanted water, you had to find a river, or you needed to dig a well if you wanted to have water. So as we really kind of come into Isaac in adulthood, Abraham's kind of left the scene. And God says to Isaac, Isaac, live here as a foreigner, because he is in the land of the Philistines. He's in the land of the Philistines in Genesis chapter 26. He said, live here as a foreigner, and I will be with you, and I will bless you. I hereby confirm that I'll give you all these lands to you and your descendants, just as I solemnly promised to Abraham, your father. Now, it's super important to understand when God told Isaac this. He told him it in the middle of a famine. When God promises you something and it's not right there right now, do you still believe him? Because Isaac's in the middle of a famine in a foreign land with a bunch of people who we're about to find out didn't particularly care for him. And God says, don't worry about it. You're going to be a great nation. Trust me. And then pretty much the next thing that we see is that the Philistines start filling up Isaac's wells with dirt. These are the wells that had been dug by the servants of his father, Abraham. So now he's in trouble. He's in the land of the Philistines. He's got herds. He's got to get water to them. And the Philistines have sent a very loud and clear message of get out of here or something worse is about to happen. They literally take a well that provides water that could have been a blessing to them, and they'd rather actually fill it up with dirt to send a message to Isaac to get out of there. We don't want you here. Move on. Have you ever dug a well that somebody else has filled up with dirt? I'm talking metaphorically. I'm guessing no one in here has dug a well. Well, maybe there might be a few of you who have dug a well, but metaphorically, have you ever dug a well? Because wells in the Bible, they symbolize life. The water that comes out is absolutely necessary for people to be sustained and to live, and they symbolize life and they symbolize community because people would gather around the wells. You might even find a wife at a well, right? If you don't know what I'm talking about, Google it. Bible wives at wells. You'll find it. It's there. There are people. I'm not going to give it away. Look it up. Wives at wells. It was community. People would gather around. It could be the center of life because you wanted your well to be pretty close to your town because the further away the well was from your town, the more you had to walk to get water. And trust me, walking with water is not fun. So you put that well as close as you can to your town. Center of life. So I'm going to ask you again, have you ever dug a well that gives life, something that mattered to you, that gave life to you, and somebody else come along and filled it in? I'm sure everybody here has done that. So what does Isaac do? He digs some more wells. He moves to a new place, still in the land of the Philistines, and he reopens wells that had been filled up by the Philistines that his dad had dug. He reopens them. But he moves on a little further, digs another well, and the Philistines are not happy. They're like, we don't want this well. We don't want you here. In fact, we'll just take the water. You get out. Has anybody ever chased you away from a well that you dug? They didn't fill it in. They just chased you away, so you can't have it. So Isaac names this well Essek, which means argument. Have you ever had an argument over a well you've dug? Happens in churches. So what does Isaac do? He moves, and he digs another well. But again, there is a dispute over it. So this one must have been a little bit heavier of a dispute, because Isaac names this well Sitna, which means hostility. So we've gone from argument to hostility. Has anybody ever been hostile with you about a well you've dug? Yeah. Yeah? Right? Anybody ever been a little hostile with you that you thought you were doing something really good? You're bringing life, and they're like, no, no, no. And then they take it away from you, and it's theirs. So what does Jacob do? Come on, guys, there's a pattern here. He moves away. All right, just making sure you guys are awake. I know it's you're getting close to one. All right. Abandoning that one, Isaac moved on and dug another well. This time there was no dispute over it, so Isaac named this place Rehoboth, which means open space, for he said, at last the Lord has created enough space for us to prosper in the land. Don't stop digging wells. When people fill in your well, dig another well. When people take away your well, dig another well. When people argue with you about your well, dig another well. And let me tell you something about well digging. You got to dig them, and then you got to maintain them. Wells don't just stay maintained. You have to keep them up. You can't make sure that nothing falls into it and dies, because that'll spoil the water. You got to make sure that the sides don't crumble in. You got to maintain your wells. You got to maintain your wells. So how are you doing at digging wells? It's a serious question. What wells have you dug recently, and what wells are you maintaining? Like I said, I know it's getting closer to one, so I'll be a little bit more plain with you. What are you doing to create life and community? Is that plain enough? Because well digging takes work, and it's hard, and it's not fun, and people will argue with you, and they will get hostile with you, and they will take it away from you sometimes. So my question is, are you just quitting? Are you just going to be like, well, I'll just go ahead and watch Netflix at home? It's not worth it. Or are you going to be like Isaac and just be persistent? I will keep digging wells until God gives me the space that I need to maintain the well that he asked me to dig in the first place. And then I will claim the promise that God has made to me. Family, we need well diggers at Whole Life. We need you to be digging wells. Not for me, not for you, not even for the people seen around you, but maybe them, but for 7 generations from now. We need you to start thinking, what well of community and life is God asking me to build that will be a blessing, maybe to me, yes, maybe to my kids, yes, maybe, but also to 7 generations from now. how can I do that? And I know there's a couple of you like, hey, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist. Jesus is coming back. There was a point, at some point in my career, I won't name when to not embarrass anybody, but I worked for a builder who was a Seventh-day Adventist, and he did shoddy work. He said, doesn't matter, Jesus is coming back. I'm not building it to last, I'm just building it. Well, because Jesus is coming back. Like, well, I can tell you it's been a couple years since then. And we're still waiting. I believe Jesus is coming back. I sure do. I look at the news. I believe it. But I'm planning as if he's not. I'm planning as if it will be at least seven generations from now. Not because I want it to be, but because I am glad that generations that came before me built this building, created community, and dug wells that made Whole Life what it is today. And didn't just say, well, Jesus is coming back, we're not going to worry about it too much. Family, are you digging wells? Are you helping people dig wells? Are you being a part of maintaining wells? Here at Whole Life, I am so grateful for we're coming up on a 100-year anniversary next year. Yeah, 2026 is Whole Life's 100-year anniversary. And that happened because a lot of people dug wells. They brought life and community. I look at this full room and I think, and I look at online, I know that there are almost as many people watching this online as come and sit here. And I think about the community and the life that the generations before us have created here. Whole Life, a place of acceptance, a place of love, a place where you know you're wanted no matter who you are, what you look like, or what's going on in your life, that this is where you're wanted and you're supposed to be. People have dug wells for that. Wells have to be maintained, and new wells have to be dug. And as we move into the next century of Whole Life's life, we have to be thinking seven generations ahead. What are the new wells that need to be dug? Coming up in July, I'm going to give you some ideas. We're going to have a whole church discussion. I want to prime you for that because I want you to be a part of it. We've been having the discussions, and now I want all the voices. I want it here. But we've got to be talking about this. What are the wells God's going to... And by the way, when we dig wells, we can expect there to be some arguments. It's okay. As long as we're nice to each other. And we can expect that maybe outside of here, there'll be some arguments. And we don't care whether... those people are nice. That's not our job, is to be nice. And we can expect that when we go about this, we can expect that there will be some hostility, because anytime God does a good work, there's going to be hostility towards it. Just the way it is. But what we can't do is stop building wells. What we can't do is not maintain the wells that God has given us. So what I'm really trying to ask you as I close is, are you digging wells? Because Isaac doesn't get credit for it, but many generations later, Jesus sits down at Jacob's well, Jacob's son of Isaac, who I think Isaac probably taught how to build wells. And Jesus drinks water from a well generations past. He drinks that water and then he offers a better product to more people. Not just to the Jewish people, but to the Gentiles, to everyone. So family, go dig a well.
Hi, this is Randy McGray, podcast producer and host here at Whole Life Church. Loving people into a lifelong friendship with God is our mission at the Whole Life Church, and our podcasts are designed to help facilitate conversations that help us grow together in that pursuit. Now that you've heard the message for this week, don't forget to check out the Whole Life takeaways for this message, swipe up in today's show notes, and join the conversation. Speaking of conversations, each Wednesday morning we take a closer look at the week's message. That's right, the one you just listened to. We discuss practical ways to apply spiritual lessons and ask honest questions about the issues we face as Christians, all focused through the lens of grace. Your voice is a welcomed addition to that conversation. We encourage your thoughts and your questions by sending a voicemail or text to 407-965-1607 or send an email to podcast@wholelife.church. You can find everything podcast related on our website, wholelife.church/podcast. And plan on spending every Tuesday evening and Wednesday morning with us as we bring you the Whole Life Church inspiration you love straight into your headphones. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.